Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, March 17th, 2015. Happy St. Patty's Day, Al.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Do you have green on?
Yeah, it's kind of green.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I did forget green today, so I guess I'll just have to pinch myself, but, and I want to
make... Well, it's something you probably deserve, Melody.
You think? Thanks, yeah. Al. I like you, too.
Mm-hmm.
But happy St. Patrick's Day to all the listeners out there that are Irish and those who participate in the holiday by wearing green. And I just want to make an announcement tomorrow. Greg Hunter will be joining us tomorrow. And, you know, we're always pleased to have him join the program. Looking forward to that. And... didn't look forward to the pricing of gold and silver today. A little bit of pressure on gold, down $5.70 at $11.49. You have silver down 8 at $15.65. Platinum was down 12 at $1,096. And you have palladium down 16 at $764. You also have the USDX today down just slightly, 0.08 at 99.63, putting pressure on oil down 67 at 43.21. The paper markets today, I'm sure they brought the Dow back. It was down, yeah, it was down about 160, 170 points most of the day, down 128 right now. 17,849. The NASDAQ was up 8, 49.37. S&P down 7, 2,074. The yield on the 10-year was 0.04 to the downside at 2.06. The euro climbed back up to a whopping 106, up 0.24. So, I guess most eyes today, I saw a little bit of, you know, the Federal Reserve went into their big meeting today, and so it's a two-day meeting. But I would think that a lot of the focus is on the elections in Israel today. None of the mainstream media is really reporting on those elections. And I don't think anybody truly, you know, unless you are, very involved in the politics of Israel, You know, you hear different people talk about if Netanyahu leaves, it's going to be bad. But
bad for who?
Bad for everyone is what I've
been
hearing.
Then why do people vote for the other guy?
Well, you know, what's funny is because, you know, Netanyahu is claiming that they're actually bringing people in and rigging the elections. And we know they do that here in the States. You know, they pardon?
We hear they do it, and they do it sometimes. It's true that they do it sometimes, but I don't know how extensive that is in this country. I mean, I don't doubt that it happens.
No, I agree.
You know, I mean, the use of John F. Kennedy was elected based on voter fraud in Chicago.
Right.
It's not a new thing. It's not a new idea. It's recognized, but some people think it happens. You know, I don't think it's generally a common situation. There are a lot of conspiracy theories out there that say, oh, my gosh, all the elections are fixed. Well, if that's so, people have to know, the candidates have to know who's going to win and who's going to lose. So if you're going to nominate me to run for Congress, for example, and I know that the election is fixed and I can't possibly win, I don't know why I'm going to waste much time going out there and talking to voters and being insulted on the radio and television and the rest of that sort of thing. I mean, if I know the game is fixed and I'm fixed and I'm designated to lose, I'm not likely to get very excited about it. And yet when I watch the politicians, they do seem to be, they really think they've got, both sides seem to think they have a chance and they're fighting to win. That isn't going to happen in a fixed election where everybody knows it's fixed. You know, it can happen in one or two elections here and there where the loser doesn't know the game is fixed.
I don't think they need to fix them so much as they did previously, because you have all these various funds that are available to the politicians, and we've learned that those who spend the most are the ones who get elected. And certainly the media has a big play. So to that degree, yes, these elections are bought and paid for. You know, it depends on how much media, the mainstream media. We all know that, you know, all the networks are basically owned by six people, I believe, six corporations, all the news medias and outlets. So, you know, I mean, there's certainly the information and the fairness of these elections are not. I mean, they're highly unfair.
Yeah, and they're highly stupid, too.
And
that's one of the problems that we have in this country, is the American electorate is not all that bright about understanding what their own interests are. They're probably too trusting, at least those who vote. You know, it is unfortunate, but people get elected in this country by playing to the lowest common denominator. There aren't many politicians that happens once in a while, but very few are truly inspirational. They don't appeal to our better sides. They say, hey, vote for me, and I'll see that you get an extra $500 a month. I don't know. It's unfortunate. It's not just a question of the system. It's not just a question of politicians. It's also partially a question of the caliber of the people that are voting in these elections. And whether they're really voting to do what's right for this country, or they're just voting to see how much they can get for themselves. I think too many of us are to see what we can get for ourselves.
I think that's right for the country. I think that has happened more in the last two elections. But I think prior to that, I don't think people actually voted. They voted for their interest, their main interest, and so forth. But I think people voting more for themselves has actually happened in these past two elections. But I do believe a lot of these politicians are groomed. I do believe they are chosen, and I do believe they are placed in positions and have the backing, so they do win. So. You know, maybe perhaps it's not actually changing the computers to where someone gets voted for, but certainly they are chosen, groomed, and positioned to win. That I do believe.
Yeah. You know, it's one of these things where there are undoubtedly sufficient studies to pretty much indicate who the voters are looking for. you know, right down to whether they're male, female, what their age is, how do they look. They look like they're from Central Casting. And it, once they understand, okay, here is the appearance the voters are looking for. All right, all they have to do is sort through however many potential candidates they have who have or are willing to go along with the party line and just grab somebody and say, okay, let's see. Bob, you look pretty much like what the voters are looking for. Bob, you're going to be our candidate. People need to spend more time and understand, you know, get a little better idea of when you're being hustled and conned. And the big point, well, a big point, is that we are led to believe that it's all about the economy, stupid. You know, this is something Bill Clinton started, his mantra during his first election. It's all about the economy. That is to say, it's all about the money. Insofar as we vote for the candidate that's going to put the most money in our pockets. That's a terrible, terrible bias. If we're going to do this country any good, you ought to be voting for the candidate who's going to put the most freedom in your pocket, the one who's going to provide the most liberty. And instead, what we're doing is we're voting, if we're members of unions, we're voting to get more money for unions. And if we're corporate executives, we're voting to make more money for corporations. And if we're, you know, retired, we're voting to somehow screw the public out of more money for the senior citizens. And everybody's got their interest, but their interest seems to be money, only money. And I just don't see, you know, it may be that that's always been the case. I don't know that it's always been the case. But who is really pushing for what they regard as some measure of liberty and freedom? There may be some out of the Tea Party members in the Republican Party. They might be. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but among the American people, we are too inclined to vote for whatever is financially in our interest, whatever put more money in my pocket, and to heck with the rest of them. I don't want to pay any higher taxes. No higher taxes for me, but those other guys over there, yeah, tax them and give the money to me. And the government goes along with this. They know that we think this way, and they cater to that bias, that stupidity, and they promise we're going to take more money from those people over there and give it to you because of your gender or your age or your race or whatever. You're special. You're entitled. You know, we're going to take money from them and give it to you because you are entitled. No, you're not. There isn't one of you in this audience that is entitled to one nickel that you haven't earned on your own. And any time the government comes in and says, oh, you're special, you're entitled to something you haven't earned. Right? Number one, government is exposing their criminal tendencies. They're inviting you to be a crook also so you can rob other people. What else? It just is. It's bad for the whole society. Somebody needs to come up and say, look, we don't have it. I mean, Kennedy made the point whether or not. He said, ask not what your country can give to you. Ask what you can give to your country. Well, I don't know that you need to give it to your country per se, but instead of just worrying about your self-interest and who's going to put the most money in my pocket, got to start thinking about, and it's not easily done. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. But we have to start thinking about restoring some measure of liberty and freedom in this country rather than welcoming the police state, which knows exactly how to seduce all of us. Look, they're dumb. We can buy. I don't remember. Who was it? Newt Gingrich. He calculated that they could buy the whole Congress back 10 years ago, something like that, maybe more. It would only cost, at the time, it was something like $500,000 or $1 million. You know, to essentially buy it. These are bad calculations. They may be true, but they do not bode well. They set the wrong example. They encourage all of us to be money grubbers, thieves, hustlers, con artists, pimps and whores. We don't understand the need to earn what you've got. But too many people just want to have. They don't want to earn. They believe the stuff they're entitled. You're not entitled to anything you haven't personally earned. And they have no respect for property rights. They don't care if somebody else earned it. They're just sitting back and say, I want it. I want mine. Give me, give me, give me, give me. I just don't see when we, and I'm sure I would be surprised if more than one person in 100 realized the implication for property rights that go to, that we can find in entitlements. Entitlements deny the idea of property rights. All right, somebody earned the money and we're going to take it from him and give it to somebody else. They say, oh, it's a good idea. No, it's a denial of property rights. I think it's an important error, omission, tragedy, when the people are kind of conditioned to just say, property rights, I want it. What else do I need to know? Need to know something about earning it, and very few people get that anymore. I won't say very few, but I don't think it's a majority. There's certainly a substantial minority, all right, of welfare and subsidy recipients who just see the government as an opportunity to hustle. Something's got to be done about it, and something will be done about it, because the government really doesn't have enough money to provide all these entitlements anymore. They're going to have to be cut, and people go, oh, my gosh, where's my free lunch? I wanted my free lunch. That politician, you promised me a free lunch for the rest of my life, and now you're not giving me a free lunch. I am shocked, shocked, I tell you. Where's my free lunch? They're going to run out of free lunches in this country, and we're going to live to see it. And virtually everyone who's listening to this program is going to see that day. And when we get there, there's going to be people screaming. And it's going to be sad and tragic because the people who've been getting the free lunch have lost their ability to make a sandwich, fry a hamburger. They don't even know that anymore. They just demand their free lunch. I'm entitled to something for nothing. I voted for some politician. Now I'm entitled. It's just crazy. The whole thing is lunacy to my mind. And it's, for me, it's just one more illustration of the kind of madness that seems to have captured this country. And I am of a, I am unable to understand how this kind of irrational behavior is going to continue. How can it be sustained? Isn't it causing us trouble that will come back to haunt us all? I think it is. But the government proceeds to say, no, 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 we just keep on bribing everybody and giving them, promising them another free lunch, and maybe a free dinner, and maybe even a free breakfast if they get up early enough to eat breakfast. It's worked before. It'll work again. I don't think so. I think we're coming to a moment where it won't work. And when it does, I mean, there's going to be trouble. There could be. Can't tell you absolutely, you know, the whole world's going to explode. That's not my point. I think there are going to be people that are badly hurt, and they're going to scream very loudly initially. But we'll get through it. It's going to be a painful transition, and a whole bunch of people who used to rely on free lunches are going to find out, oh my gosh, I actually have to work for a living. Who would have thought it could come to that, Melody? People actually having to work for a living.
Well, you know what? Maybe if they hadn't left, took all the jobs out of this country, it's a little bit more than just people wanting a free lunch. It's they've been pushed into these positions. They've been pushed into these positions because these jobs have left this country. I do believe, and no one can change my mind, there is an agenda. And certainly lowering our standard of living, placing folks in a position to where it makes it harder and harder for them to get by. So it's, you know, it's we're seeing this country change. I mean, you can go back 100 years. I mean, they've been working on it for a very long time.
Yeah, I understand that.
And so
a lot of people wouldn't agree with that. They think this is recent. It's not. It's been going on since the beginning of this country. And I have a theory on why that is. And if Melody wants me to get into it, I will after we take a commercial break. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, we're going to continue our 2015 special. You must give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And if you have any questions that you'd like to email us, we'll bring them to the program. Questions at DGScoins.com. And if you'd like to give us a call today, 1-855-566-3738. That's 855-566-3738 if you'd like to call into the program today. And what's next, Al?
Well, I said I'd say something about, it won't take me long, but, you know, you talk about this problem that we have in this country, and it's been going on for a long time, and it didn't just start in the last 10 years or 20 years, or even with the New Deal in 1933. I published a magazine from 1990 to 2012, and it dealt with legal reform issues. And during that time, it was kind of a fluke that I even got into that business, but I did, and there I was. And before I started, I couldn't spell publisher, and now I are one. It was a little of that, but regardless, one of the things I began to understand as we explore the legal system and the problems people had dealing with the courts and the lawyers and so on, I began to sense that there had been an ongoing antagonism against this country from early on in its inception. We aren't just dealing with forces that are working against us that started in your lifetime and mine. We can trace these, this antagonism, we can trace it back almost to the beginning of the country, right? And what I came to understand, or at least believe, is it's because of the spiritual foundation on which this country is built. This is a spiritual foundation that was unprecedented in Western history. Nobody had ever done this before. We did something, and it's not just political, it's spiritual. Nobody'd seen this, all right? And it was found in the Declaration of Independence. It said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the second sentence in the Declaration, or the third sentence in the Declaration, says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. They're telling us, first and foremost, that all men and women, and even the unborn, are endowed by their Creator at the moment of their creation, not at their birth. 14th Amendment doesn't kick in until you're born. But the Declaration of Independence applied from the moment of your creation, and it said you receive certain rights from God. Point one. In the past, the only people who got their rights from God were the sovereigns. The individual king, the individual queen, whoever it was that was running France, Italy, Spain, England. The sovereign received their rights from God in a coronation ceremony, and that's why they were the sovereign, because they received their rights from God. One person in the country was sovereign. All the rest were subjects because they did not get their rights from God. This country started out with the premise that we are all, every single one of us, endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and the principal business of government is to secure those God-given unalienable rights. That notion is completely unknown to previous governments throughout world history. The closest you could come to it was when the Hebrews thought they were God's chosen people. And they said, we get rights from God, but the rest of these idiots are all a bunch of goy animals. They never agreed that the world was populated by people who get their rights from God. This spiritual foundation, from my perspective, is something that wicked forces, forces of evil, forces of, this is not just money, this isn't just politics, they've been working against that principle since the beginning of this country. And they've pretty much succeeded. They've moved us into circumstances where most people have no recollection or understanding of the extraordinary spiritual foundation on which this country was built. And therefore, when people like myself talk about this sort of thing, people say, huh, what's he talking about? Well, it was to destroy that spiritual foundation, in my opinion. That's what I came to believe while I was publishing that magazine, and I continue to believe it. I think this is, and so from my perspective, what we're dealing with when we see these things happen, this isn't just politics or economics. This is spiritual warfare. From my perspective, spiritual warfare. I don't mean there's no politics. I don't mean there's no economics. But primarily, for me, this is spiritual warfare. What else, Melody?
Well, it always has been. I mean, we can call it politics, we can call it whatever we want, but the big picture, it is spiritual. Mm. I mean, it's a battle that's started from day one, I guess.
I think it's been going on since Adam and Eve.
Well,
in retrospect, and I know that sounds silly to a lot of people, and it's not something I would have said, when I first started publishing that magazine back in 1990, I would have thought that idea was silly. All right? But you stick with it for a while, and you look and you see, and you look and you see, and before you get done, you start to think to yourself, you know, I think this has been going on, not even just since the beginning of this country. This is a kind of spiritual warfare that's been going on since the Garden of Eden. So, true or false, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, the Garden of Eden, that's a little bit different. That's the war between man and male and female. Anyway, that's a joke, Al.
I know that. I get that it's a joke, but yeah, I think it has more to do with the vegetarians and the people who only want to eat fruit. You understand?
Mm.
Some people are strictly vegetarians. Others, they want to live on that fruit diet. That's where we got into the trouble. What's next, Melody?
Well, the U.S. economy just keeps disappointing. You had new housing starts today plunge 17% last month. And, of course, the big question is how much did the weather contribute to that big drop of the 17%? If you
Wait a second. Are we talking about the weather from this winter? Or the weather from the previous winter?
Well, it's real funny because they've been doing a lot of comparisons between this year and last year, saying that this winter was much colder, and it was certainly colder, but I think it was a shorter colder. I remember last year it was, you know, seemed longer, but, you know, when you look into your southern states and so forth, they're all down. So overall, you had a housing starts plunge 17%. And certainly the... So, you know, the big argument is, you know, what is really going on? I saw some builders being interviewed. They can't build, they say they can't build less expensive homes because they can't find cheap land. Land is very hard to come by. The prices on, you know, raw land is not coming down for where they can build. So they, you know, they can't bring the cost down in the home. So
maybe they ought to build, maybe they ought to build down in Mexico. I mean, as long as they're going to be selling to Mexicans in any case, why not build instead of having the Mexicans come up here? Why don't you build the houses down in Mexico?
Plus, I've also seen the rentals, the prices on rentals are up significantly over this year. So, you know, it's one thing this country does not have is real affordable housing. Housing is very expensive in this country. And considering as much land as we have and open spaces that we have,
and also consider how many homes have been foreclosed and may even now be sitting empty. Now, I don't know how many there are. There were a lot of them back a couple of years ago. Today, I don't know.
Well, we do know that the banks are still carrying a lot of those properties on their books. Mm-hmm. We do know that you had huge funds come in and hedge funds come in and buy up a lot of these of those foreclosed homes, turn them into rentals, and so it's that, you know. So are we beginning to have another problem in housing, or is this just another sign that you know, certainly our economy is not? And if they even attempt to raise rates, I mean, this housing market will certainly just fall apart.
I think the point is that we don't have enough money to support the housing industry.
Mm-hmm. No,
that's the point. And, you know, we could build Taj Mahal for everybody in the country. Each one of you gets your own Taj Mahal. Just vote for me. I'm going to go to Congress, and we're going to hand out a bunch of free money, and you all get a free Taj Mahal. We can do that if we have enough money. Ultimately, they can point to the problem that land is too expensive, or the winter was, it actually snowed in December or something like that. Oh my gosh, it had snow in December. I don't know if we'll ever recover. They can point to it, but the point is, we don't have buyers that have enough money to go out and buy those homes. Certainly not, especially the least expensive homes. It may be that the most expensive properties, they, you know, some reports indicate that they're doing pretty well. They can still sell homes to rich people, the top 1%, they're buying. The bottom 20%, they're having a hard time. Maybe even the bottom 30%, who knows, maybe even 50%. They're having a hard time getting a new home. We've got an article here from CNBC, and the headline is Millions of Underwater Homeowners Are Trapped. Weak housing construction and the growth of the single-family rental market have pushed down supply for sure, but one nagging leftover of the housing crash is literally trapping potential sellers in their homes. Negative equity. Some 5.4 million homes, or 10.4% of all the homes with a mortgage, were still in a negative equity position or underwater. All right? As their owners owe more on the mortgage than the home is currently worth. All right, you bought a house for $200,000. We had the Great Recession begin in 2008, a housing crash about that time, and your house is now, you paid $200,000 for it, now the house is worth $150,000. Now what? The market says the house is only 100 and a half. You don't have enough equity in this. You don't have positive equity. You actually, if you sold the money, if you sold the house for $150,000, you would still owe on the $200,000 debt, and you would owe more than you'd get from the sale of the house. And so they're saying these people are 10% of the people with mortgages are trapped. Additionally, the 49.9 million U.S. homes with a mortgage, approximately 10 million, 20%, have less than 20% equity, and 1.4 million have less than 5%. In fact, homeowners would also find it a difficult time to sell their homes, because not only would they lose money in the process, but they might even not qualify for a new mortgage. So now we have people who bought homes during the home boom, the housing, the home buying boom in the double aughts, the late 90s and the early double aughts. They get in there and everybody was buying homes, and now some of them are trapped in them and they can't sell them without losing money. And if they do sell them, they might not be able to get another mortgage, and now they're back to being renters. So they're caught in a very strange situation. It says improvement will come with higher home prices. That's one of the people they interviewed here. Yeah, that's a great idea. If price goes up, but home prices will not rise if the dollar continues on its deflationary path. Home prices will not rise if we slide deeper into economic depression, which for right now means average home prices are unlikely to rise in the foreseeable future, which means people that are trapped are trapped. Most of them tend to be in the lower end of the economic scale. We don't have people, you know, trapped in a house that's worth cost them $200 million. They can find somebody who'll buy it. But if you've got a house that's worth $100,000, $125,000, you may have a problem trying to get out of it. You know, so all of this is simply another illustration of the idea that people aren't buying homes the way they were in the past. They made them easy for everyone to buy. We had liar loans, right? Anybody who had a pulse could go into the bank and say, look, I have a pulse. He says, how much money do you need? All right? You sign on the line, tell them you're making 100 grand a year, they'll give you the loan to buy the house. Doesn't matter if you're making 20 grand a year. Nobody cared. Nobody checked. Because the government, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, were essentially guaranteeing to buy every one of the mortgages that the banks agreed to provide to even liars. Banks didn't care. They were getting paid and making a buck. Every time they wrote a line to write it to a homeless guy, can't read, can't think, burnt out, doesn't matter. Make your mark here. We'll sign you up for $100,000, $200,000, whatever. What's the net result of giving all of these homes to people who didn't have sufficient credit to actually purchase them? What's the net result of giving these homes to people who actually didn't earn enough to belong in that house? And the result was massive foreclosures, large quantity of extra homes on the market. When are we going to exhaust the supply that we were handing out? Essentially, it's an exaggeration. But we say we're handing out free homes, come to the government, get a free home, you know. Great, got free homes for a while. Then when it became apparent that you couldn't even pay for the free homes, then the homes had to go back. Somebody had to foreclose on them. Now what? Now we got a stack of these homes. And the point here is that the problems we're seeing today were made 10, 15 years ago. Government came up with a great idea. We can put everybody in a home, and we can use the mortgages as collateral and fractional reserve banking to generate more currency, loan to other people so they can buy cars and flat-screen TVs. But in the end, their brilliant idea, which was just manipulation, it wasn't about earning, it was about having, blew up in their face, blew up in the country's face. We're still dealing with the problem. You know? A decade later, we're still dealing with the problem of government entitlements. You're entitled to have a home. No, you're not. not entitled unless you've got enough money to pay for it. And they've, you know, ignored that again, and they've just said, oh, no, entitlements, that's the secret. No. I don't think it is. I disagree. What else, Melody?
Well, I think we're ready for a break.
I guess we are.
Yes, we are.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Oh, we were going to talk a little bit about China.
Yeah, I've got an article This is interesting to me. This was from an article that was written by Bill Holter. And he talked about a number of things, but I pulled an excerpt out of the article, and because it caused me to do a little thinking, which happens every once in a while, and then I bless everyone, all right, with the insights or delusions. But whatever it is, here's a dose of perhaps insight, perhaps delusion, we'll see. Bill Holter writes, he says, I believe China will fare poorly when the paper and derivatives markets around the world collapse. He's talking about a global depression. And he goes on, he's referring to China. He says they have a very over-leveraged real estate market, which many of their banks and shadow banks have lent to and have exposure. Their real economy and manufacturing will suffer as global demand drops further because of economic depression. It won't be pretty, but they will survive and eventually thrive. Why? Because undoubtedly China is working toward the yuan becoming a reserve currency, at given time, the reserve currency. My theory is this. China, even though they are probably willing and plan to eventually remark gold much higher than where it trades today, they'll be forced to mark gold higher. They mean the price. Raise the price of gold to reliquify or recapitalize their banking system. This is not groundbreaking thought, as gold has been marked higher in the past, monetary episodes in order to capitalize treasuries and banking systems. It also has side effect of generating some inflation and kickstarting the economy. And it is in parallel fashion to which I believe China will ultimately be forced into. That last sentence is not completely rational. But here's what crosses my mind. Does China see that it will soon suffer an economic depression, if it's not already? They pump a lot of sunshine over there, just like we do in this government. But there's lots of sunshine. Yay, yay, everything's peachy. All right. But the truth of the matter is a number of people, including myself, believe we've already slipped into an economic depression. And part of them, people say, oh, my gosh, it can't be a depression because people haven't jumped out of windows. And you know, in the Great Depression, one of the things that I read one book on the subject, and one of the author pointed out that during the Great Depression, most people didn't even agree we were in a depression until 1933. In retrospect, we go back and we say, oh, the Great Depression started in 1929. But at the time, people didn't even know they were in a depression. They didn't agree. There wasn't a consensus on it until about 1933. And they finally said, you know, we are having a bunch of trouble here. The point is the same thing could be true today. It's entirely possible that we could be in an economic depression and not realize it. Because we are taught that the Great Depression started in 1929 with the stock market crash, and it was as if someone flipped a light switch and one day everybody was making money and the next day they were all broke. It wasn't like that. It was as if the previous momentum that was carrying us upward, it was lost, and we began to slowly degrade. Didn't happen. Overnight. Didn't happen like throwing a light switch. It won't happen like throwing a light switch now either. But point then is that we may all, technically, if you want to face up to it, it's arguable that the world is already in a global depression. Now, maybe yes, maybe no. There are people who would say, no, that's not true yet. Maybe they're right. But there is a good argument. Maybe we're already in a depression. But my question is, does China see that it will soon suffer an economic depression? If it's not in one already, do they think they're going to get one? Does China plan to compensate for that depression or mitigate the effects of that depression by grabbing the status of world reserve currency for its yuan? You know, the world reserve currency status has allowed the United States to enjoy an unearned prosperity over much of the past 70 years. It should follow that even in the event of a global economic depression, whichever nation or nations issued a world reserve currency, that nation would tend to prosper much more than the nations that do not enter that world reserve currency. The world reserve currency status has been very, very good to us. Right? It may be a con, it may be a fraud, whatever. But it's done us some good. And it would follow that if another nation, like China, for example, were able to grab and say, no, we're the world reserve currency, they'd enjoy the same benefits that we have. And it doesn't mean they wouldn't have a depression, but it means that their depression would be more mild than what is seen in perhaps the rest of the world. Right now, in the midst of global economic depression, the U.S. economy may not be very strong, but it's still stronger than most other national economies. At least part of the reason for the U.S. relative strength is the fact that the U.S. dollar is still the, or at least a, world reserve currency. Everyone pretty much agrees that the dollar's status as world reserve currency has kept it alive, relatively valuable and viable, ever since the dollar became a pure fiat currency back in AD 1971. The dollar still has value, even though it's intrinsically worthless. What's held it up? One, it was the petroleum dollar. It was the petrodollar. It was the only currency you could use for many years to purchase crude oil on the international market. And two, it was the world reserve currency. Even though it was worthless, everybody had to have it. It was kind of a currency hula hoop, All right? Everybody wanted one. Didn't amount to much, but it was still kind of, it has been interesting. Most people agree that if the U.S. dollar lost its status as world reserve currency, the dollar's perceived value would fall dramatically. Prices would rise significantly in this country. It appears to me that the U.S. economy depends on the perceived value of the fiat dollar. And the fiat dollar's perceived value depends on holding the status of world reserve currency. Therefore, it should follow that faced with an upcoming global or national depression, any nation that could retain or acquire the status of world reserve currency for its national currency would be highly motivated to do so. Now, not many, there's not many contenders. There's the United States and China right now. The UE, the European Union, they can't pull it off. Nobody else can really pull it off. The only contenders for world reserve currency status are the United States and China at this point. Unless you wanted to go into special drawing rights from the International Monetary Fund, you might be able to make that argument. But I'd say China and the United States are the two contenders. And I'm wondering, you know, one of the things that's bothered me, I've been aware of this for 4 or 5 months. According to the U.S. dollar index, the dollar has been deflating for the last 8 months. It's gaining value. It's contra. I've talked about it on the program. I've talked about it. It's bewildering. It's confusing. It's the sort of thing where I sit back and say, how can this be? This is contrary to the government's interests because the government is the biggest debtor in the world. If deflation is allowed to persist, the dollars become more relatively more valuable. In a sense, they become bigger. All right, you borrowed small dollars, and now, after 8 months of deflation, you're paying off with bigger dollars. They have more purchasing power than they had a year ago. It's a formula that will drive a lot of individuals, corporations, and sometimes even governments into bankruptcy. We like inflation because it lets us pay off our debts with cheaper dollars. All right? They have less purchasing power, and therefore they cost us less at the end of the loan than they cost us at the beginning. We may be at the end of the loan, the end of the mortgage, we could be easily paying our mortgage premiums with dollars that are worth only 75 cents as compared to the dollars that we borrowed. That's an inflation. We go into deflation and the opposite takes place. At the end of your loan, you could be paying off your loan with dollars that have a dollar and a quarter, dollar and a half purchasing power as compared to the original dollars you borrowed. It is a formula for financial ruin. Huh? Government should not be allowing deflation in this country. They should be fighting for inflation to stimulate the economy. They should be fighting against deflation because it'll take us into a depression if it's allowed to persist. The government should be against it because they're the biggest debtor in the world. It makes them pay off their debt with more expensive dollars, and yet we've had 8 months of it. So I'm beginning to wonder, it's crossing my mind, after reading Mr. Holder's article and just catching, you know, this one little section on China, I'm wondering if the U.S. government's mysterious willingness to allow the fiat dollar to slide into deflation for the past 8 months of the U.S. dollar index, is that mysterious willingness, can it be explained as an attempt to shore up the dollar's claim to status as the world reserve currency? Is that what they're doing? You know, if the dollar has lost 95% of its value in the last 40-some years, if it continued to lose value, it's worth a nickel as compared to what it was back in 1970 in terms of purchasing power. It can't continue to lose value indefinitely before people finally just throw out the can like a wrapper on some bubble gum. If the value of the dollar continued to diminish, how long could the dollar remain the world reserve currency? So I'm beginning, and I don't think I think the answer is not too long. It might be another couple of years, but not too long. And insofar as that world reserve currency shores up the dollar and makes it worth something, even though it's intrinsically worthless, they can't afford to lose world reserve currency status. And so it's beginning to cross my mind, is that what's really going on? Is China trying to set up a circumstance where it can become at least a world reserve currency. Maybe not the, but a world reserve currency. Are they doing it just to mitigate whatever depression may be in their economic future? Is the United States saying we can't continue to inflate? We've got to deflate the dollar to make it more valuable so it can continue to hold on to its status as world reserve currency. Is that why we're allowing this deflation? To maintain that status as world reserve currency? Because it's one of the few things that gives our dollar any perceived value. If we lose that status, the dollar is going to go in the tank. And once it does, I can't see how the economy is going to hold together. So, you know, we can speculate that China's solution to an upcoming depression may be to acquire status as a world reserve currency. And we can speculate further. We can sit down and ask ourselves, is status as a or the world reserve currency, is that the ultimate prize in the currency wars that are now being waged among the nations of the world? Looking to see who's going to be the alpha dog in this pack of mutts. We have these fiat currencies, a pack of mutts. Who's going to be the alpha dog? Because there's great advantage and great power. Financial power will flow, economic power, probably military power, will flow to whichever nation is the one that issues the world reserve currency. So what do you think, Melody? Is this the big prize? Is the U.S. and China fighting to see who's going to be the world reserve, who's going to provide the world reserve currency, or do you think that's too far out?
No, I don't think it's too far out. It's been mentioned. You mentioned it. That certainly, there is a currency war that has been going on for quite a while. I'm not so sure. I mean, China has made the statement that they don't believe there should be a currency that should be the reserve currency. But I'm sure, as you mentioned, they probably wouldn't mind sharing that position. So when you look at the world is sort of being separated into zones, maybe. I mean, they certainly have their BRIC nations. I mean, they're not real strong nations, but certainly it's, they're working their way to become stronger. You have a lot of other countries
just working their way to survive.
You know, you're certainly having countries that are turning to China instead of the IMF, to help them out of their problems. So, yeah, I think countries are positioning themselves because they understand what's going on and they want to be able to be at the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Which is to say, you want to be at the welfare line or the subsidy line. Get to the front of the line so you can get the maximum dollar from whoever's handing them out. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow with Greg Hunter. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too fast.
In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
Money.